Conversations with Linda. This hour we'll take your phone calls as we roll along here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us this hour, Conversations with Linda. Linda, do you get tips, a lot of tips from our audience on certain stories?
Oh, yes. They come to me from all directions in the world anymore. And definitely after Coast and after Phenomenon Radio and after the YouTube, it's like everything seems to be expanding in the interaction that we have with the general audiences, and that there is something that is freeing people up more, I think, to come forward and tell their own experiences. Or the military people, there are so many people in the military that are frustrated because they have firsthand knowledge, but they had to sign non-disclosure agreements. And they find that it is frustrating that they know that we're not alone in this universe. They have dealt directly with something related to what is called the alien presence, and that we are living on a planet that is like a 1984 cartoon, that we have this enormous story that is like when I said the pink elephant in the room, that it's there and it's all over the planet, and we are living and acting as if it's not there. It's really crazy. And that is what is refreshing about the December 16th New York Times above a fold, putting up videos and doing the article by Ralph Blumenthal and giving a credibility that I hope that all the media, if they would stop acting like it is something that they are supposed to smirk about, and they would shift quickly to trying to educate themselves so they could have intelligent dialogues with somebody like Luis Elizondo, who served in the CIA and the Department of Defense and was the head of this agency, and that he must have a huge depth on all things related to whether it's extraterrestrials, time travelers, other dimensions. It's the most important thing is for all of us on every square inch of the world to be able to talk with each other honestly and have governments that are based on telling us the truth, not based on trying to protect themselves with lies. That is remarkable to realize how deep this policy of lie and denials about anything that is related to UFOs and other life in the universe, how entrenched it is, how deep it is, how wide it is, and what is it going to take, George, to open it up to the kind of planet that we wish we were living on, which is where leaders were there literally to help the people as opposed to lie and monetize.
Absolutely. And I think originally the program, the study of 2017 started because they were getting these bizarre reports, and they weren't quite so sure, Linda, if they might have been Russian or Chinese craft, and I think they wanted to jump into it, and then they quickly realized it has nothing to do with them.
George, hold on. The timeline for our government, the UK government, the Russians, the Chinese, for knowing very much about the fact that they were dealing with UFOs that could do things in the air that were impossible, that was in World War II.
Right, Foo Fighters.
Well,
right?
Yeah. So this 2005 to 2012 or 5 years to 2012, that's another theatrical window dressing. That is not where anything began. That's what they've decided, that they could draw a line in the sand and say, we had this department and it's real and it was funded through the work of Senator Harry Reid, and we're going to investigate these anomalous technologies that pilots have been reporting for decades, and it didn't start in 2007 to 12 at all. It's been going on since probably FDR. And therefore, it's, in a way, it's another cover. It's a cover that is trying to open up. It's kind of an oxymoron. It's trying to open up, but it's still a cover of the previous 70 years. And that's the part that's frustrating. Hmm. This is not new. Our government and the UK government and Russia and China, they for sure have tremendous amounts of information and buildings that have retrieved artifacts. And that comes to the heart, though, of what is the alien presence? Why is there interaction in such bizarre ways? Is it a combination of something that moves dimensions quite literally? And I've been doing a lot of research on some hypotheses that we are, if we knew the truth, our matter world, the world we're in, where Planck's constant determines the distance between electrons, protons, quarks, if you moved it the tiniest billionth of an inch, you wouldn't even be able to pick up something. Your hand would go through. That's how precise Planck's constant affects the matter world that we're in. Well, if you changed the, we'll call it the frequency and the distance of what's happening at the subatomic world that allows our hand to interact with the desk or the chair that we're sitting in, if you changed that just a tiny bit, you might then have the dimension next door, and that there might be things there that want to get a foothold in this matter world, and that they can penetrate periodically. They can penetrate with using frequencies. They can penetrate for reasons that are not clear, but that is part of the explanation for high strangeness from a dimension next door. And then if there are 1,000 million various dimensions, all based on different frequencies, then there would be a huge challenge to have a technology where not only would you be moving through this universe, like Starshot wants to get up to light speed so that they can get to Alpha Centauri in 4 light years, but you would maybe want technologies in which you could penetrate other dimensions by a frequency shift. What would that be like for a human? Maybe not possible, but is it possible for other dimensions to try to penetrate into this matter world? That's the dialogue. That's the science. That's the mysterious physics that a lot of people right now are seriously discussing.
All right, now to the phones we go. Thomas in La Jolla, California starts it off. Go ahead,
George,
Thomas.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure,
and
thanks, sir.
Linda, you do great research, great reports.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to ask you, Linda, if you or perhaps your whistleblowers have spoken about the policy group Majestic. And Majestic appeared perhaps after World War II to advise President Truman, possibly Eisenhower. I don't think they interacted with Kennedy, but Majestic coordinated research on the extraterrestrial presence, and also, more importantly, they established policy for the intelligence agencies, for the military, the Pentagon, for corporations, etc. And I was wondering, have you heard anything about Majestic?
Oh, my Lord. That goes back to the early 80s. After I had done all of the work on animal mutilations and had produced that documentary film, A Strange Harvest, for the CBS station.
By the way, great documentary.
Oh, thank you so much. It was 9 months of solid 18-hour-a-day work with not a single let-up. That was really an intense...
That's an average day for you, Linda.
Probably. But MJ-12, Majestic 12, that surfaced in around 82, 83 for the first time. and was in some document references. And eventually, when the SOM 101 training manual for how to retrieve and box and ship and where extra, and it says extraterrestrial biological entities right on the cover of the manual, and what is the top is MAGIC, M-A-J-I-C, and that this has the warnings from Majestic 12 on this training manual. That Psalm 101 document, I and Bob Wood and others feel is one of the most important leaks of all time, and we got that, I think, in 1992. So for 10 years, there had been all kinds of information that was leaking about MJ-12, Majestic 12, as a group of 12 people that Harry Truman put together that were a combination of military scientists and business people that he trusted. And as we understand it from documents that have leaked, he stressed that they were to work, monitor, and analyze without the public and the media ever knowing that they existed, and that's where the huge and strict policy of denial began, as I understand, and that Harry Truman did an executive order. It was a classified executive order in order to bring about MJ-12 and to continue the high secrecy going on into out of his term, and the baton was passed to General Eisenhower, who became president, and that Eisenhower accepted and continued the policy of secrecy and denial. But when he went out of office, that famous speech about the military-industrial complex being a threat to the fabric of the democracy of the United States, I think it was because he saw that what started out as perhaps a reasonable and good idea to have executives and military and intel study trying to find out what the phenomena was before they went to the public, with the idea that eventually they would talk to the public. But instead, power begets power. Black money begets black money. Black money, underground labs, and power, they begin to become their own self-fulfilling prophecy. They generate themselves. And now today, 70 years later, this huge underground existence of laboratories in Area 51 and China Lake and Wright-Patterson, and the list goes on and on, that the public, putting sunshine and honest answers to the public and the media about the fact that they have been studying, back engineering, what is at least in documents called extraterrestrial technology, and that today, we are being treated to a theatrical production, controlled and precise. And it's been decided that this is the best way to do it. Start with something 2007 to 2012, 5 years. Mr. Elizondo is probably speaking very honestly about what he was tasked to do, and I admire and congratulate him and the group for taking on this role now to try to introduce to the world through the fact that the technology that they have studied and that they release in the infrared, and they have got a lot more, their own words say that what is caught on infrared gun camera from these fighters is incomprehensible, as that word is used in one of the sentences, is incomprehensible to Earth's understanding of physics. Now, that should be the lead everywhere in the planet. That should be the lead that reporters should be having discussions with Luis Elizondo and Mr. Mullen and the group.
Yep.
Instead of the still trying to keep a smirk in a half-cocked face so that they are politically correct about the fact that UFOs and ETs are supposed to be a subject that people laugh about, and then it goes away. I'm sorry. We've turned a 90-degree angle. There's no smirks. This technology that is in this infrared technology, it needs to be discussed everywhere on the planet. People need to understand. There is one part, I think it was in the transcript at To the Stars, and it says that in that gun camera footage, the infrared off of San Diego, where there are the two fighters and you can hear the pilots.
And, oh, that's great video.
And the object starts out as an oblong white object, and then it metamorphosizes into what looks like a classic disc shape, black instead of white. And then it begins to rotate, and it rotates 100 degrees. And there's a sentence in that analytical work that says, this object rotated 100 degrees without ever changing its altitude. And what that means is if you could take a 747, put it in the atmosphere at 20,000 feet where this UFO disc-shaped thing was, and you would have it on a corner, it would begin to pivot in the air 100 degrees, and it would pivot without moving from the spot that part of it is pivoting. There's nothing. There's no technology in the world of Earth humans that can do that.
Let's go to Jason in Loveland, Colorado. Hey, Jace, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love listening to you guys. I've been a long-time listener.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask if you had any new news about the Nazca mummies.
Oh.
In a minute to go, Linda. Go ahead.
Yeah, in a minute. I can say yes, that the big issue for me is, where is the original cave? I think it was in the Palpa region, and that the Huacaros, the grave robbers and sellers to the international world, I think they are the ones that are keeping that secret. I understand that there were 20-some bodies inside of this cave location. And why we need to get to the cave is that academic science will not accept anything about these bodies unless they can go back to the original source and do chain of custody on every body and do DNA sampling for everything that's in that cave and photograph it. That's the big part that is missing. Eventually, we may have some exciting DNA results reported from somebody, but scientifically this was mishandled largely because the Huacaros want money and they can trade through the world. And that is a big story, George, that I'm realizing how much international trade for money has been abusive in Peru.
It's huge, too. We're coming back in a moment with final calls in a second. Here's our program schedule for the rest of the week. Going to take a little vacation day tomorrow to be with the family. Jimmy Church filling in for me, and Jimmy will be on Saturday. On Christmas Eve, Connie Willis will be with us, and then on Christmas night, I shall be back. As you know, no tape programs on the holidays, so gather around the radio and have some fun. During the holiday weekend, we'll be here with live shows all weekend long, and really looking forward to it. We've got some great little vignettes. And yes, to those of you who have been emailing me, we will be playing at the end of the Christmas night show the letter to Michael. That will be there too. And welcome back to our final segment with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, let me ask you, anything new with the crop formations, or is that seasonal primarily,
yeah,
isn't it?
By August, usually by around August 13th in England, it's over. They've harvested everything, and then it goes in April, oilseed rape starts coming up, and in May, that's where you see the beautiful photos of the yellow seeds of the rape, and that's usually the first crop that will have a pattern, and then it goes into barley and then wheat. So it's April to August.
All right, well, let's go to the calls now. As promised, Debbie in Oregon, you're on with Linda. Debbie, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Linda.
Hello.
I've heard you for a long time. And yeah, I wanted to ask, there was two questions I wanted to ask. One was, I've heard one of those booms in Crescent City, California. It was about midnight, about 6 years ago. It was really scary. And I knew it wasn't lightning. And then the other thing was, a relative of mine had a UFO sighting in 1978 at McClellan Air Force Base out there, and it was right over their house. And they said it was so big they could feel the heat coming off of it, and then it was a dark green, and that the military came out and took people's cameras away. And I was wondering if you had any pictures of something like that, or any reports, or anything, because I never heard much about it.
Your large triangles have been reported quite often, actually, and the idea of the military or government coming to take cameras away is not new. It's happened in other investigations that I have done. In the past, there has been lots of intimidation, depending upon how serious the event was and how much the military team wanted to intimidate citizens to keep them from going to newspapers or radio or talking with anybody. When they control military, they can divide and send people around the world. And I've met many different people who have had some kind of an encounter, maybe with three or four people in a desert situation, and then they are talking about it, and then they are reprimanded, and the next thing they know, they are separated by being sent to duties in other parts of the world. That happened to people after RAF Bentwaters back in December of 1980. People ended up being sent away, sent off, and that reduced the ability for people to talk about it. So all these tactics of trying to keep in a kind of 1984 Orwellian way truths that have been happening on this planet of some kind of other intelligences for more than, I think, really, that we're talking about something going back millions of years, but even in the current 5 to 10,000 years, for the 20th to the 21st century 1% controllers to try to make an entire planet deny and not see and not discuss other life in the universe that's here, that is just, it's almost, George, isn't it beginning to seem like it's verging on insane, even if it started out with a very good reason of trying to preserve national security?
Sure does. Back to the phones we go. Debbie, thanks for your call. Let us go to Dan in Bozeman, Montana now. Hey, Daniel, go ahead.
Hi, George and Linda.
Hi there, Dan.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Thank
Hi,
you.
Merry
you too.
Christmas.
I was wondering if you believe in multiverses and the fact of that quantum shift where extraterrestrials might kind of, spy on us or just kind of like check us out.
I'll tell you, one of the most haunting things that I ever heard. This goes all the way back to somewhere in the mid-80s. And the source worked in the Air Force, I believe. It was Air Force or Navy. But they were talking about having done an assignment for MJ-12. And that in the process, they had been exposed to a question having to do with what is the real nature of our universe? How is it really built? Are there other dimensions? Do other life forms travel in time? And that he had been exposed to a discussion like that with people who were working for MJ-12. And he said, I want you to know that one of the MJ-12 people said to me, he said, the truth is that there are as many universes as there are grains of sand on Earth.
Wow.
And that around all of the universes is a cold, dark sea. And I said to him, well, what did he say the cold, dark sea is? And he looked at me and he said, honestly, Linda, this is his reply. No, I cannot tell you. And you would be changed forever if I did tell you. That has haunted me. And I think that if the takeaway is nothing more than this, we have evolved on one small planet in a very small offshoot arm of several arms of what we call the Milky Way galaxy. And we know from reports this year alone that they have now raised the number of potential galaxies in this universe by a trillion or so more. And every galaxy has trillions of stars. And so the idea that matter worlds could go on to such an extent, but that something would encapsulate it all that was cold and dark, it's bothered me. I've thought about it a lot, and I don't have any answers. I just know that what we have been taught as standing up primates on Earth is only related to our physiognomy and our brains, our consciousnesses, and our souls on this one little planet. And this universe, the one we're in, is vast, and that if we begin to start thinking in terms of a universe teeming and seriously teeming with life, and that when we turn SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, certain radio signals, and we get what Paul Davies down in Tucson at the university there, he wrote a book. It's called The Eerie Silence. And he was questioning, why is it that we listen with our radio ears and we don't hear anything from the universe? I had that discussion just a couple of months ago with somebody who is a physicist and has worked on some projects probably related to the alien presence. But he said, if we were able to expand our knowledge about frequencies in the universe and be able to open up to frequencies that we have not listened to, he said, I'm convinced that we would be hearing a booming, buzzing universe. It's, again, we understand so little, and we're on this exciting threshold where if we stop lying, if all the policies of denial end, whatever is good, bad, indifferent, and neutral, that we all as a species learn everything, then maybe the whole next eon will be that the exciting part of discovery will be that we are in a matter universe, but that there are many other dimensions of other frequencies, and that there is some fundamental relationship between the life force in matter bodies and these other dimensions, and that if we knew the true big picture, that there is or are evolutionary forces from the matter world up through dimensions, and that there is a divine field, as we have talked about in the past, and that there is a reason and a function. But what would the cold, dark sea be? If anybody out there thinks that they have a solid answer, I'd like to know.
Let's go to Wes in Massachusetts, first-time caller. Hey, Wes, go ahead.
Hi, George. Linda, how are you?
Hi.
Wonderful.
So my story, I'm just going to tell you a little bit on how I got into this and a little bit about my story. My dog had passed away, and I Googled, does the dog's soul come back to the house? Well, my very first picture, I got two orbs, and I got the dog as an apparition. So now I video every night. So I come down my hallway. I live on the third floor. I have a kitchen window. There's no deck out there, no porch. And I come down the hallway, and I'm videoing. And a couple hours later, the pictures I took and the video that I took, I went back and looked at. And I had this thing glowing. Its head was glowing in the window. I didn't even know that I was catching these pictures. So when I saw that, I went back to the video. And this thing, its head was as bright as the sun. And in less than a split second, it shut the glow off in its head, but I can still see the outline of the thing's head in the window. But I have five pictures, and this thing does not look human. And I have all kinds of orbs in my kitchen. I also, 2 days later, was videoing, and I caught an owl that's half the size of my window looking at me through the window. This thing that was glowing was so intelligent, it must have knew that I was looking in that direction and it didn't want me to see it. But I would sure love to send you these pictures. I mean, I still, for the heck of it, I drive a truck and these orbs are following me all over the place. These orbs,
there's two categories here that I'm hearing from you. One is when we're in a digital age.
Minute to go, Linda, by the way.
And a lot of the orbs in so many of the digital images are electrostatic discharges, whether it's in iPhones or other digital cameras. That's one of the things that we're confronted with. Electrostatic discharge also creates orbs in digital images. The second thing is that you can send me your frames. I will send them to somebody I know who's very skilled in studying images. So if you want, make them into JPEGs, send them to earthfiles@earthfiles.com with your name and address and phone number, and I will do some research and I'll get back to you. It's earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
Thank you, Wes. Linda, we're almost out of time. I want to wish you, by the way, and your family the most gracious and glorious Christmas. You have been such a great part of the program over all these years, and I just hope you have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you, and I return that to you, and I wish all of us joy and health, because without health, we don't have anything, and more breakthroughs toward truth and light in 2018.
You got it. Linda Moulton Howe, our investigative reporter. And, of course, Jimmy Churchin tomorrow and Saturday. Connie Willis on Christmas Eve on Sunday. And then I will be back on Christmas night on Monday for you. And we'll have a great series of programs all week long. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.